From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As Republicans gear up for rushed confirmation hearings next week to install President Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, a new report by Public Citizen has analyzed his publicly available judicial record. And the results are worse than we could imagine. In case after case, Kavanaugh sided with business interests over human interests. According to the consumer advocacy group, he, quote, decided or wrote an opinion against the public interest 87% of the time in split decision cases in five key areas, including consumer, environmental, and workers' rights cases. Meanwhile, progressives are angry that Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer cut a deal with Mitch McConnell to fast-track the confirmation of 15 judges ahead of the long weekend so that Senate Democrats running for re-election could have more time to campaign in their home districts. They're calling on Schumer to hashtag whip the vote of all his party members in the Senate to oppose Kavanaugh's confirmation. My guest is Robert Wiseman, a public interest advocate and activist and the president of Public Citizen. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
So let's talk about this report that that you did, which is one of very few pieces of analysis that we really have at our fingertips because the Republicans have been rushing this process so much. Which part of Kavanaugh's record did you examine? Because there is a lot that's still not known, right?
Right. Well, on the issue of his career, you know, he's been involved in a lot of really hard right efforts. He was a part of the Starr investigation. He worked in the Bush White House, the Bush II White House. He worked in the Bush-Gore recount effort. And especially for his involvement in the White House, there are literally millions of documents and that are at the National Archives that are not being made public that would reveal what he in fact did, what he in fact said, what his role was in things like authorizing the use of torture. So our report has nothing to do with that, although those are crucially important issues. And the way Chairman Grassley is rushing his hearing forward in the Senate, it seems unlikely that any but a tiny trivial number of those documents will be unearthed and made public before the confirmation hearing occurs. In any case, what we did is look at his judicial decisions. He's been for a decade now on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. He is a prolific writer. And we looked at a set of his decisions. We looked at not the ones that turned out 3-0, where all three judges agreed, but where there was a split, 2-1 either way, or the en banc panel, where all the judges in the circuit, 12 of them, heard an issue and divided on it. The reason is a lot of cases that come before the appeals courts aren't very close. The judges come out the way they do because they don't really have any discretion. But on the ones that are split, sort of by definition, there's a matter of controversy there, and there's some room for judges to go for one side or the other. And it's in looking at those cases that you can really get the best sense of what a judge's philosophy and predilections are. So as you said, the results looking at Judge Kavanaugh's opinions in these split decision cases is really remarkable. There are about 100 of these cases overall. We tallied up about 60 of them in the areas that we were looking at, and the results are striking. So in consumer and regulatory cases, he comes out 18 times on the business side, 4 times on the public interest side. In environmental cases, it's 11-2 favoring the business side. And in worker rights cases, employment law and union issues, it's 16-2 for the workers. In police and human rights abuse cases, it's 7-0 against the victims for the perpetrators effectively. And in the two antitrust cases he heard where there were split decisions, he was both times in favor of merging parties and against government enforcers. And I have to say, what we tried to do was be purely objective and just look which way he ruled. If we had actually scrutinized the decisions themselves, in a number of occasions where he votes for what is the public interest side, he basically gave a rationale that is contrary to the public interest. He just came out that way. So if we'd actually evaluated the substance of the decisions rather than just the outcome, the numbers would be even worse than these really remarkable numbers.
In other words, he is a very clear ideologue. He is not like Anthony Kennedy, who he would replace.
Well, actually, Anthony Kennedy, he's not like Anthony Kennedy, although on the issues we were looking at, Anthony Kennedy wasn't so great either.
Right.
But what's amazing, I think, and important looking at these numbers is, you know, Judge Kavanaugh, like a lot of conservatives, have a variety of theories about how they're going to deal with regulatory agencies. And the judges in at the D.C. Circuit focus especially on reviewing decisions by government agencies. And there's an elaborate theory about how much should they give the benefit of the doubt to the agencies when an issue comes before them. And Judge Kavanaugh has his own theory about that. But in fact, he doesn't show very much deference. Let's take it away. In fact, he shows a lot of deference to the agency, whether it's the EPA or the Department of Labor, whoever it is, when they decide something the way corporations want them to come out. But when those agencies decide against corporate interests, when they're being challenged by corporations, he shows them no deference. He is almost hostile to the agencies. And in those cases, he almost always sides against the agency and for the corporation. So he does have a philosophy, but the philosophy kind of gets pushed to the side in favor of an outcome, no matter what, that's going to favor the corporations involved in the case in almost every instance.
So we're basically looking at a nominee who has not met a regulation that he liked, which is very much in line with and consistent with the Trump agenda as a whole and the GOP's agenda to dismantle regulations, to dismantle federal agency oversight in the public interest.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you look at his decisions in the area of clean air and clean water, he's just time and time again, he finds a way to go against the Environmental Protection Agency. He's just very, very hostile to the agency carrying out its mission. And he's also put forward some really important theories without sort of getting too legalistic about this. In that he was involved in a decision on net neutrality, which he said should be struck down on a number of grounds. But one of those reasons he gave was he elaborated on what's called the major questions doctrine. And this is not really settled law, but it's been written about, but he was really elevating it. And what he said is, where there's a major question, an important issue, a government agency shouldn't regulate in that space unless it had very specific direction from Congress. It shouldn't be enough that an agency has a general mission to carry forward to protect the public from environmental harm, say, or to make sure there's competition in the marketplace. That shouldn't be enough. When they're looking at a big question, there should be a really specific authorization for action. So in the case of net neutrality, even though the Federal Communication Commission is in charge of making sure that the telecommunication system operates fairly and for the interests of the public, that's not enough, he said, for them to issue the net neutrality rules. Congress should have directed them to issue the net neutrality rules. But what that means is, judges are then empowered to decide what's an important question. Because he said, look, obviously net neutrality is an important question. It would transfer power over the internet from private players to the government, which is an untrue characterization of what net neutrality is about. A more realistic assessment might have been to say what the FCC was trying to do was maintain the existing way the internet operates according to the companies that would be regulated and making sure that they don't gain new rights and exert new power to censor and undermine the free flow of information. If you put it that way, they were really just trying to maintain what the ISPs, the cable companies, say is the status quo, and it's not so obviously a major question. But Judge Kavanaugh took it upon himself to decide what it's a major question, and that's a role that goes to the judges if you believe in this doctrine, which cuts only against regulation and never for it. That's just one of a number of really extreme theories that Judge Kavanaugh has that time and time again cut in the interest of corporations and against the interests of the public.
Robert, in the report by Public Citizen, you refer to a very specific case that your own organization was involved in, Public Citizen versus National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. What was Judge Kavanaugh's opinion in that? And what does that tell us about the kind of Supreme Court justice he would be?
Right. Well, this is another one where there's a legal issue that's going to feel a little legally to people, but it's super important. So the question in this case, and in many cases that come before the courts, especially challenging governmental agency action, is does the party bringing the case have standing, the right to bring the case? And what the Supreme Court says is the Constitution requires that there be an actual existing controversy. Like, you can't go to the court just because you think something's unconstitutional. It has to be affecting you directly, and then you can make the claim that it was unconstitutional. Well, in this case, Public Citizen, my organization, was challenging a rule about motor vehicle safety dealing with tire safety. And we said that the rule that the agency NHTSA had put forward was inadequate, wasn't safe enough, and that as a result of this inadequate rule that was in fact mandated by Congress, people were going to die and be injured needlessly. We said, look, we've got more than 100,000 people in the organization. We all have an interest. Everybody's a member of the organization, has an interest in advancing auto safety. And moreover, a significant number of people statistically in our organization are going to be affected by this rule. They're going to get into accidents because their tires are going to explode or otherwise not work because this rule is inadequate. Well, what Judge Kavanaugh said, and this he was joined by the other judges on his panel, is that's not good enough. He said, you have to tell us which person is going to be injured by this rule.
Wow.
And he said, you can't say, well, you have 130,000 members, which is what we had at the time. And if you add them all up together, some of them are going to be hurt. That's not good enough. That's just putting together 130,000 individual claims, none of which you could show are valid on their own. So he said, effectively, in a case of where there's future statistical likelihood of injury, there's no basis for an organization like Public Citizen or any other citizen group to bring a case, or for any set of people to bring a case, because we can't specify the persons that are more likely than not to be injured. Well, that means we just couldn't bring the case, which is what ultimately happened in that instance. By contrast, he says, companies that are regulated, they always have standing to bring a case. They can always, so the auto companies in that instance could have challenged the rule as being too hard, as being too tough on them if they wanted, because they are directly regulated, according to Judge Kavanaugh, and therefore they do have standing. It's a total double standard in terms of whether corporations can bring cases or whether regular people can bring cases, and it cuts only in favor of the corporations and always against the public interest.
Robert, one of the big concerns among people who are really worried about Kavanaugh standing and suspicious of Trump's nomination of him is his position on executive power and the power of the executive branch. Does his record, at least the part of it that you've examined, give us any insight?
Well, the cases we looked at don't really. He writes a lot about separation of powers, which is the sort of background constitutional issue when we're talking about presidential power and congressional authority over the president, whether the Justice Department or special counsel Robert Mueller could subpoena information from the president or force him to answer questions. He doesn't, he writes around the general issue, but he hasn't had any decisions that really directly impact on that. On the other hand, of course, he has spoken about it, and he was himself involved in the Ken Starr investigation of President Bill Clinton. Is it a strange place where he was involved in the Starr investigation, which almost everybody agrees was really a vast overreach? I think even a lot of Republicans agree with that in retrospect. But he was a perpetrator in that case. Afterwards, though, he said, "Look, it was really wrong that the special prosecutor in that case should not have had the authority to demand information from President Clinton, should not have had the ability to prosecute President Clinton." Those weren't necessarily the positions he had at the time, but it's what he says has had publicly as his position now. This is prior to the Trump saga unfolding. And those comments absolutely suggest that if issues over conflict between Mueller and Trump reach the Supreme Court, that Judge Kavanaugh, if confirmed, is a very likely vote in favor of President Trump.
Robert, what about the efforts that Democrats had been making to have access to those other millions of documents that Republicans were essentially withholding? They had to file a Freedom of Information Act request, which is kind of shocking that lawmakers had to do that. Has that gone anywhere?
Well, they're proceeding with their open records request under the law you referenced, and they've repeatedly asked Judiciary Chairman Senator Chuck Grassley to slow down the process of the confirmation hearings to get more documents out, and he's just rebuffing them at every side. So I think a number of the senators actually are trying aggressively to get that material out. It's not happening, and it's not going to happen before the confirmation hearing. The odds aren't too good about it happening in any meaningful way before the ultimate confirmation vote, I'm afraid, either.
So there, and I'd mentioned that there's a lot of anger among progressives that Democratic leaders don't seem to be strong enough or aggressive enough in opposing Kavanaugh, and we're very upset about Chuck Schumer's decision to let Senate Democrats go home early for the long weekend in exchange for fast-tracking confirmation of a number of Trump's judges, lower court's judges, and they're worried that that action essentially previews caving in on Kavanaugh. What do you think?
Well, leaving aside the merits of that decision, I don't think it previews much about how the Kavanaugh debate is going to proceed. There's obviously your worries about whether or not the so-called centrist Democrats will vote to oppose him. But it's not, I think, what should be the real focus. I mean, all the Democrats can oppose him, and he would still be confirmed unless at least two Republicans break off and oppose him, two assuming that John McCain's seat is filled before there's a vote, which I think is a certainty. So the real focus, the real advocacy focus and the mobilization focus has to be on those gettable Republican senators, of which the two primary targets are Susan Collins in Maine and Lisa Murkowski and Alaska. I believe if there's a real chance that they're going to come off and vote to oppose Kavanaugh, then I think the Democrats, including the centrist Democrats, are very likely to also vote to oppose him. So that's not to excuse the Democrats and say they don't have to be fighting hard or they couldn't do more. I think they do need to fight hard. I think some of them are doing a good job. Others could be doing a better job. But at the end of the day, this is going to come down to the Republicans. And that's really on us, the people, whether we're going to impose enough pressure, particularly on those two senators, to get them to vote the right way or not. And there's only so much that Chuck Schumer can create the environment in which they will be more or less likely to vote to oppose Kavanaugh, but their decision is not going to be based on Chuck Schumer's view
As far as you can tell, is there any technicality that Democrats could use to stop these confirmation hearings? I mean, I understand that this is the pace at which these confirmation hearings are going is unprecedented, and there is, there's plenty of reason to suggest that Trump's appointment of this person to a court while he is under criminal investigation and the people around him under criminal investigation is a very direct conflict of interest.
Well, I think there's all kinds of reasons to be upset about this nomination. I don't think the Democrats have any procedural moves to slow it down. I think that there are a number of reasons that the Republicans are trying to rush it through. Including because the president wants to make sure that he's got someone who's a likely sympathetic vote for him in case Mueller issues get to the Supreme Court. I think they also, I'm sure that Mitch McConnell is well aware that if the millions of documents about Kavanaugh's time in the Bush White House were to become public, there's a chance that something emerges that could undermine his nomination chances, and they want to proceed absolutely before there's an opportunity for those documents to be reviewed, cleared, made public, and then critically evaluated.
How do you hope people will be able to use the report that we've been discussing earlier, the report that by Public Citizen analyzing in a specific way his record, a part of his record where there were split decisions?
Well, we're hoping that people will read it, and we're hoping that senators are going to read it. You know, we've sent it up, and it's been shared around. It's going to inform some of the confirmation hearings. And I think, you know, not only are these hearings going sooner than they should, they're very likely to go much shorter than they should. Given the immensity of the importance of this decision for decades of our country's future, it would be reasonable to spend weeks on the hearing. I think that's not in the cards right now. But hopefully these issues are going to be raised by the senators, and hopefully it helps shape the debate and drive it to an appropriate conclusion.
Robert, where can people find the actual report and share it? Is it available in a downloadable form on your website?
Yep, it's up at citizen.org. The report itself is really long. We've got a short summary version of it. It's CitizenVox, CitizenVox.org, and we've been tweeting out a simple graphic that encapsulates the 100 or the 50-page report and the 100 case review into one chart. So you can get the takeaway at just a glance.
So that's citizen.org or citizenvox.org. We'll post links to both from our website. I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Robert, and we'll see how the next week or so plays out.
It'll be very interesting. Thanks so much.
My guest has been Robert Wiseman, a public interest advocate and activist and the president of Public Citizen. We've been discussing his new report analyzing part of Brett Kavanaugh's judicial record ahead of the confirmation hearings that are set to take place next week. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.